This is Ken McLeod. Thousands of people around the world listen to these podcasts every week, just as you are doing now. If you find them helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Your generosity helps us maintain and expand the website for the benefit of yourself and other practitioners worldwide. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind, the nuts and bolts of emotional reactivity.
No, you had a question. Totally different topic, I imagine.
I think so. I am dealing with like hatred and intolerance, and it comes up in when I'm sitting, and I think, okay, well, I'll try to just be present for it and maybe be curious. And while compassion kind of eludes me, like just sort of like a radical curiosity, I guess, I've heard. It's very overwhelming. It's like for like exterior stuff that happens and, you know, and then, an attached to that hatred is again, a shouldn't, and then a shouldn't for the shouldn't, ad infinitum. Yeah, it's like infinite regress. And then, so I'm just wondering. So I have these like words to help me, like, okay, radical curiosity or like relax. But I'm just wondering, maybe sometimes those words get a little stale, and they lose the meaning, and it's still. And now I'm just like, wow, this is intolerable, and it's. Very sustained.
Okay.
So anyway.
Is it okay if we engage this a little bit here?
I don't know what that means, but sure, I guess.
Okay. So can you bring up the feeling of intolerance or hatred? Can you bring it up? Can you
like at just at a moment's notice?
Yeah. Can you recall it?
Can I recall it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So just recall it and tell me what happens in your body.
It's like a black ball right here.
Okay. What physical sensations?
It's hot.
Hot, okay.
It's tense. It's...
What's the ball made of?
Like... fire and like black tar.
Okay. It's right here, solar plexus?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in this exchange, we just go as far as you want. You
okay.
Tell me, okay? Okay, now, my sense is you're already feeling something else.
Than the anger?
Yes.
Probably, yeah.
Like, if I'm reading you correctly, it's hurt and pain.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to explain what it's about.
Okay.
You don't need to do that.
Okay.
Okay. But it's there. So on the one hand, there's this hatred, which is, and intolerance, which is a hardening.
Right.
Right. And on the other hand, there's a hurt and pain, but you can only experience that because you're softening.
Okay.
Okay. So you'll have this hardening and the softening going on at the same time. And it's probably a little confusing.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, that's always the case.
Okay.
Wherever we are angry, there's that hardening and that heat and fire. But wherever there's that anger, there's also the hurt, where we feel weak and vulnerable and... at threat and so forth, and hurt and so forth. Now I'm going to ask you to do something that may be a little challenging, okay? And I want you to do this at this point only at the level of the body,
okay?
I want you to feel the hardening and the softening at the same time. So just take a couple of moments. And there'll be parts of you that harden like this and burn, and then parts of you that soften and feel hurt. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So just do that and take half a dozen breaths, just feeling that. Okay, that's really good. What was that like?
Like I'm shaking.
Yes.
I could convulse.
Pardon?
It's like convulsing almost.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy there, isn't it? Okay. Was it tolerable?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bizarre because everyone's watching me, so.
Well, actually, they were probably all doing it themselves because they tend to do that. I was watching it, but they
Yeah, I mean, I feel like perhaps I would have vibrated, my body would have shook a little more had I not maybe contained it a little, because I'm holding a microphone.
Didn't want it to go flying across
right.
the room. Yeah. Okay. Yes, and that may be, because usually when there's that kind of hardness and that kind of pain, there's something in us that's trying to come out.
Okay.
Okay? And when we go with the hardness, we just shut everything down, and it doesn't feel very good.
Right.
And when we go with the softness, it feels overwhelming, and that doesn't feel very good. Okay. But in exactly the same way that I was suggesting before, there's that busyness and dullness.
Right.
You include both of these. And don't try to be balanced, but you just keep including both.
Okay.
And so sometimes the body is shaking, but it allows what is ever at the core to start to come out. Don't try to do this necessarily all at once.
Okay.
Because the sense that I have is there may be something a little deep. But when you practice, rather than, you know, being curious, and which is good, or trying to be a certain way, just open to exactly what you're experiencing. And use your meditation practice to stay with it. And when you notice that you're hardening against it, ease off, because that doesn't help. And when you notice that you're getting lost in it, ease off, because that doesn't help.
Okay.
And you just kind of feel your way with this.
Okay.
And yeah, and that, and you're going to be doing that a lot. Because there's all this stuff in us that we haven't experienced. And when anything outside resonates with it, all of these very powerful feelings coming up. It's interesting what you say about that ball of anger being like this black, burning thing. Because that's exactly how the hell realms are described in Buddhism.
Yeah.
You have this thing inside you which is burning you from the inside out.
Yeah.
You know. Does this help?
It does, thank you.
Yeah. So you make it really alive that way. And just what you're experiencing. And you can see we didn't have any shoulds or shouldn'ts in here.
Okay.
They're not helpful.
No.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
In the last couple of classes on the Four Immeasurables, you had mentioned that you were talking with another practitioner and that you had agreed that you wouldn't wish... And I'm using the word pain. I'm not sure that's exactly the word you used, but you wouldn't wish this on anyone. And so my question is, can you elaborate on the characteristics of that experience versus the characteristics of avoiding?
I'm curious about your curiosity about this question.
What I thought you would be. well, there's a lot of cautions and, you know, caveats and all these things about undertaking this work, going there. And then there's this place that I'm experiencing of no escape. So it really is Dante's Inferno. It's like, I've turned around to go back to the hill, and there really is a lion, a leopard, and a she-wolf there. And so it's this sort of, okay, can't go back, and how do you go forward? And if, you know, I was looking at some of the Japanese Buddhism because I'd never really looked into that, and found this fellow that founded Shin Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
Shinran. And
yes.
He basically declares to his followers, hell is my only destination, and I'm walking to the pure land. So there's things like that that come up. And like when Art's reading about reincarnation, I think, oh, well, I think I'm already in and out of a lot of hell realms. And so which hell are we talking about here?
Okay. This is a very interesting question to me, and something which I gained an additional insight relatively recently. So I'm very glad you asked it. What I actually said in the class is that I wouldn't wish the pain on my worst enemy.
Oh, your worst enemy.
So it's actually quite a bit stronger than anyone. And yes, I have a friendship with a Buddhist nun who's actually from California, but she lives in England right now, and who's in the Theravadan tradition, and she's been a nun for a long time and has trained very thoroughly. And she used exactly the same phrase to describe some things that she'd been going through a little while ago. And so we had a nice discussion about that. Now, I'm going to take a big leap here, which you may find a little strange, but I've often contrasted the icons of Buddhism and Christianity. Mm. The principal icon of Buddhism is the statue or the picture of Buddha seated in meditation with one hand touching the ground. And it goes back to the moment of Buddha's awakening when he's challenged by Mara, saying, what gives you the authority to sit here to say this? And Buddha touches the ground and says, the earth is my witness, which is a very powerful way of saying, I'm here, and that's that. The principal icon of Christianity is Christ on the cross, writhing in agony from the pain. Well, I was reading a book, actually, The Life of Pi, in which this question of these different ways of relating our symbols in these religions was brought up again. So that got me to thinking about this whole thing. And it just happened that I was going through a very difficult period in my own meditation where I was again experiencing just really very, very difficult pain. And I said to myself, I feel like I'm being crucified. Mm. And then it occurred to me, one of the things you've heard me say before is that when you get right down to it, the aim of Buddha's practice is to be able to experience just what arises in our lives. And in order to do that, we actually can't be anything. Because as long as we have this idea of being something, then we are in opposition to our experience. To be completely open in experience is to be no thing. And all of us have had experiences of that, being out in nature or something like that and just opening. And we don't feel like we are a thing at that point. And yet the experience is extraordinarily rich and beautiful and so forth. And another circumstance in which many people, I think most people, have experienced is when someone very close to them has experienced a loss or tragedy, and you're talking about it, and you don't feel like you are any one or something apart from that. You're just right in that, the whole experience. And it actually can be quite magical, even if it can be very intense and very painful. So that complete experience in which we are not a thing separate from experience, I think is at the heart of Buddhist practice. And in our lives, most of the time, we're going along and something happens and it resonates with stuff in us and we just ignore it and go on. And we react because we aren't really in tune with what's actually happening. But as we practice more and more in our meditation, we become more and more able to be that in tune. So when we see something in the world that resonates with us, we can be in that experience. We don't have to push it away. You follow? So inevitably, I think, in our meditation, we'll run into experiences which we have ignored for a very long time. Something in our lives, something will open them up. And there they are. You can say it is experiencing the pain that caused our conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
You follow?
I do. Mm-hmm.
Now, the only way we can do that is by actually being in a form which can actually experience that pain. And I think this is what the Christian symbol is about. It's about, if I put this in Buddhist terms, the Dharmakaya, which we can say emptiness or whatever, taking form, in this case as Christ, to experience the pain of conditioning, which is the crucifixion, so that it can know its own nature, which is Dharmakaya. You follow? That may be a bit of a stretch, but it's the rhetoric about Christ dying for our sins, I think, is a kind of distortion of that essential truth. And I think that's what is the underlying power of that symbol. That's saying, okay, there are pains, very deep pains in us. Can we actually be present in them? Because if I can be present in those pains, then I can be present in everything in my life. And then I don't have to react at all. And that puts an end to suffering. Now, what are the characteristics of that? I don't know. Well, how do you experience it? I know the characteristics of mine. I don't know the characteristics of yours.
It's such difficult material to approach and really molten. Almost, and not related to any particular words or language or specific memories, and very much moving through the body a lot. On the cushion, that all works out fine.
That's good.
It's off the cushion then. That just moving through a day and there's an event that triggers a reaction and, you know, I step into it and, you know, do the drill. And there's a point that I found over the last few weeks where I'm not really, there's the attention, I guess, has degraded at this point and I have become it or fallen into it, and it's still painful, and there's not, I haven't yet discerned a different sensation in my body at that switch, but the quality of what I'm experiencing is very different.
Yes. Okay, you're pointing or describing what's a very important point. In order to know what we are, we have to know that we aren't the pain. That is, the pain, whether it's emotional or physical or whatever, is something that comes and goes. And if it's something that comes and goes, then it isn't what we are. Well, it's an experience.
Mm-hmm.
To do so, we have to have a certain capacity in attention. attention that basically operates at a higher level than that conditioned experience, conditioned pain. If our attention isn't at the higher level of energy, then when that experience arises, all our free attention is consumed, and now we just relive it, which is not the same as experiencing it in attention. And what this points to is building a capacity in attention. And that's primarily why we practice meditation, formal meditation, unmixed with other activity. That's where we build that capacity. And why we do things like the Four Immeasurables or devotion practice or energy work or energy transformation work, all of these things. They're all building our capacity, if you follow. So that when something arises, we can just experience it. What I suggest on a practical basis is that you experience it for a short time and then stop before all of your attention is consumed. Because once it's consumed, then you're just reconditioning yourself. That is not so helpful.
Doesn't seem very helpful, other than I'm aware that it's happening and I'm observing the cycle of it, but it doesn't seem to feel right.
But there's a different, you have a different experience when you're actually in the experience and awake in the experience.
Mm-hmm.
That feels different, right?
Mm, yeah. Definitely.
So you do that for short periods and then go off and do something else. You don't try and do it all at once. Okay? And if you do that repeatedly, then you actually are building capacity, but not reconditioning yourself. And learning how to do that is a very important part of practice. We also do this with positive experiences. That is, you can be experiencing non-thought or bliss or clarity or any of these things. And when they arise, you don't try to hold on to them. You just experience and touch into them, let it be there. Then go off, continue with your day. Then when it arises again, touch into it. So that, and the key is being awake and alive and really present in these experiences. Once we start trying to hold on to it, then we're into attraction, one of the three poisons. Once we're consumed by it, we're just being reconditioned. So learning how to do that skillfully is an additional element of practice.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
To be worked on.
Yes.
This question was submitted from George, by George from Seattle. When doing bodhisattva practices, such as taking and sending and the 37 practices of a bodhisattva, how does one steer clear of moralism that is simplistic, fundamentalist, naive, and unrealistic? For example, it's one thing to acknowledge anger as a cause of suffering and to therefore form the intention to accept insult and hardship, but trying to eliminate anger seems to lead toward repression and suppression. In other words, what causes the tendency to try to stamp out negative emotions, and how does one work with it?
Well, there are a couple of questions here. Let's start with how to work with anger as it comes up in our lives. So we go to work and we're doing a good job. We think we're doing a good job. And out of the blue, somebody attacks us with some vicious insults. Maybe does it in front of other people. So it's both embarrassing and irritating. Provokes anger. From the point of view of the bodhisattva path, what do we do with that? Well, in the Tibetan tradition, when reactive emotion such as anger arises, there are three things that are possible. They aren't necessarily available to everyone, but there are three things which are possible. One is that our level of attention is sufficiently high or strong that when anger arises like that, we actually don't experience it as anger. We experience it as its transform, which is extreme clarity of mind. And so there's no repression or suppression of any kind. It's that when situations arise which would ordinarily provoke anger, we experience extraordinary clarity. That sounds like magic, but it actually is possible to train and develop the capacities in us so that just happens. But for most of us mortals, it's a little different. Somebody in this situation, we're angry. And often, as is the case with angry, we're hurt. Why did this person make this comment in front of all these people? We don't understand. So I come to a second way. And the second way is when anybody attacks us, insults us, or what have you, it's pretty reasonable that they're coming from some place of hurt or upset. And this is their way of dealing with it. So anything that we define disturbing or problematic immediately elicits compassion. And that also is the result of training. And we say, well, this person's hurting. So we take in their anger, we take in their suffering, we take in their pain, and we give them whatever peace of mind and joy or feeling of well-being that we know. And so the anger now becomes a stimulus for our own compassion. So that's the second way of working. Now, some of us are not able to do that in all situations. So we come to the third way, which is simply to restrain so that we don't react in kind, because that just escalates things and that doesn't do any good. Now, there's a tendency here for many people that when they restrain themselves, they suppress the emotion, and then the energy of the emotion goes into the body and it causes stress, and if it's done repeatedly over a long period of time, it'll cause chronic illnesses and of all kinds. So suppression is not a very good thing. And when one encounters situations like this, what is a good way is to get out of the situation or get through the situation as best as one can without doing anything harmful. But then in one's meditation practice, recall that situation and open to the experience as completely as possible. Open to the experience by first experiencing what happens in the body. So there's a situation that happened to me earlier this year, which was very, very upsetting and made me extremely angry. And as I say, I got through the situation as best I could. For the next several days, because it was a very, very upsetting situation, every day I would sit in my meditation, recall the situation, and all this anger would be there. And sometimes I'd experience it in my gut, and sometimes in my throat, and sometimes just every cell of my body would be on fire. And I just kept coming back and experiencing it and experiencing it. And so first we experience it in the body, and when we're able to stay with the experience in the body, then we experience the emotions connected with it. And often in addition to the anger, there's feelings of hurt and shame, maybe jealousy, and then we have all the other aspects of anger, like revenge, etc. And there's all of this stuff going on. You don't try to sort it out particularly, you just experience it. And when you can stay with those, then there's all the stories that come with it. How could they do this to me? This wasn't fair, and don't they know who I am? And, you know, it just goes on and on, all of these stories. By staying in all of that, the body, the emotions, and the stories, a strange thing starts to happen. we find, to our surprise, that we can actually experience all of that and rest in that experience, which may seem strange at first, seem totally unbelievable or inaccessible, but we actually can do that. And not only can we rest in it, we can actually relax. And when we can rest and relax in that intensity of emotion and disturbance, then another possibility arises, a kind of clarity arises, and often some kind of understanding of what all of this means to me and how it all came about, some kind of opening arises. And then we find that we can let it go, or that it just goes by itself. So this is how we work with these kinds of things without suppressing them and without acting them out. Now the second part of the question is, what causes the tendency to try to stamp out negative emotions? Well, we try to stamp them out, we try to get rid of them as quickly as possible, because we don't enjoy the experience of them. And sometimes we're afraid of the experience of them. So that's why we just react so that we don't have to feel it. It's also why we try to repress them so we don't have to feel it. And neither of these things, when we act out of these negative emotions, the energy goes out into the world and causes problems there. When we repress them, the energy goes into our body and causes problems there. But we do this because we're either afraid or unable actually to experience them. The way one works with that is to practice just the way I described before, building the capacity to experience the emotions. When we can experience them completely, then we don't have to act them out and we don't have to repress them. And this is helpful for everyone.
This question was submitted by James from Santa Rosa. I suffer from clinical depression with mixed states. Lately, I've been doing a meditation where I watch the rising and falling of my abdomen, saying to myself rising as my abdomen rises and falling as my abdomen goes down. Sometimes I feel like I'm going crazy. What should I do when I feel like I am crazy?
With depression, one has to be a bit careful with meditation, because the dynamics of depression and the dynamics of meditation are very similar, and it's possible that one can fall into a kind of dull state which moves into depression. So generally speaking, I would suggest that you make sure that when you're practicing meditation, your mind is open and clear. And as soon as you, if you find yourself in a dull state for any period of time, better to stop the meditation, go for a walk, and continue practicing walking meditation if you wish, but move the body and make sure that there's a good bit of energy and liveliness in the system, in your system in general. The technique that you're describing sounds like one that is practiced widely in the Theravadan tradition, usually associated with the diaphragm rather than the abdomen, but I think we're talking about the same thing. It's not clear from your question why you feel like you're going crazy, though I am reminded of a quotation from Gunaratna's book, Mindfulness in Plain English, which you might find helpful. It's a very good book. And he says something to the effect that at some point in this process, you will come to the conclusion that you are completely crazy, that your mind is like a wagon running down hills completely out of control and nothing can be done about it. And then he says, congratulations, that's how it is, but you're no crazier than you were yesterday. It's just that you know it now. The fact is that we have all of these thoughts coming up. We can't control them. As a friend of mine says, we can't control the number of thoughts that we have. We can't control what thoughts are going to come next. And we can't even control whether a given thought is going to distract us or not. So that's that sense that the mind is completely out of control is a very, very common experience for anyone who practices meditation. Suzuki Roshi in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, gives the advice of giving your mind a very, very large field, and he likens it to a horse. If you put a horse in a small corral, it'll tend to run around and run around and get agitated and never settle down. But if you let the horse loose in a very large field, it'll run around for a while, and then it'll stop and just start chewing the grass. And so what I usually recommend to people is that when you have a lot of thoughts, don't try to control the mind, don't try to make the mind quiet, because that kind of forceful approach actually increases the agitation in the mind and generates even more thoughts. Instead of that, just relax and sit in the mess. Keep some attention on the rising and falling of the abdomen, as you say, but just don't try to control the mind. Sit in the mess. And you may be surprised that if you just sit in the mess, you may find some peace in the mess. And if you find some peace in the mess, then the mess doesn't really matter. So that's one way to approach that, and see if that is helpful to you.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.